Good morning. It's Whit Monday here in Barbados, and welcome to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks going until 2 o'clock today. As usual, you can communicate with us by calling 4341790, and we welcome your participation via WhatsApp. Thank you. Many of you are already familiar with that number. I'll remind you during the course of the morning. So there's quite a bit on the agenda, so let me come straight to the telephones this morning. And I think the first person I have on the phone is trade unionist Caswell Franklin. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, David.
Good morning, Mr. Franklin. I believe the main focus of our discussion this morning has to do with the BOSS program. And we have heard from senior government economic advisor, Dr. Kevin Greenidge, that even if public workers did not buy into the program, it would still be able to garner the kind of money that the administration is looking for, $110 million per year, that it is trying to shave off of the public sector wage bill. And it says here, in the extreme scenario that every public sector worker says that they do not want this bond, it has been so cleverly designed that the objective is still achieved. So if the public sector worker says that they do not want this bond and that they want their cash at the beginning of the month, that person indicates their preference. Behind the scenes, government pays the worker still, while at the same time issuing instructions to take the bond to the central bank, which purchases the bond immediately and then is then able to sell that bond to somebody in the private sector. Another perspective on this matter comes from the opposition Democratic, well, the opposition party, Democratic Labour Party, which is one of the opposition opposing parties in the country right now. They're saying here that at the end of the day, it is a pay cut wrapped up in bonds. Now, what do you say about this whole question of the BOSS move, as they're calling it?
It is contrary to the law of Barbados. Government cannot pay in anything other than legal tender. That has been the position of the government of Barbados since 1951, when Grantley Adams introduced the Protection of Wages Act. Mind you, the Protection of Wages Act is a result of a convention, Convention 95, I think it is, of the ILO. Prior to 1966, Barbados could not sign treaties, international treaties. But Grantley Adams would attend these meetings as part of the English delegation, and when he came back to Barbados, he put in place the provisions of that convention into a law called the Protection of Wages Act. He didn't put them all. And then Barbados became independent, and on this, they then signed the ILO convention on the 8th of May, 1967. So from then onwards, if that convention did not apply to public workers, it became applicable to public workers because the convention that the government signed up, Article 2, because it says, Article 2, Section 1, this convention applies to all persons to whom wages are paid or payable. Public workers get a wage. So the convention applies to them. Better yet, though, in 1975, the ILO insisted that the government...
What is the specific ILO convention that we are talking about?
The Protection of Wages Convention.
Mm-hmm.
In 1975, the ILO insisted that the government bring the Protection of Wages Act in conformity with the convention itself, because the convention, the act, as I told you, was passed in 1951, and it did not have all the elements of the convention. So they went to Parliament in 1975, and they actually then put the convention wholly and solely to match with the Act, and the Act matched with the convention. When the Right Honorable Errol Barr, as he was then, Right Excellent, no. When in his contribution, he said, I am stating categorically that every act that comes here dealing with employment binds the Crown. That was Parliament's intention. That you can find that at page 5090 of Hansard of the 20th of May, for those who want to take notes and make things. Then there was some discussion because the leader of the opposition, Tom Adams, at the time, he pointed out that the Act did not say it binds the Crown. And Barber cleared it up by saying, further down, at page 5091, he said, I really want to bring the debate to an end by saying, as far as we are concerned, the Crown is bound, and anybody who wants to challenge the matter in court can take the matter to court. And if the courts give a ruling that the Crown is not bound, we will amend the law to make sure that the Crown is bound by this legislation. As I am sure it is bound, I give that undertaking. That was Errol Barr speaking. So the Protection of Wages Convention and the Protection of Wages Act binds the Crown. So much so, in 1975, when the Barbados Labour Party was amending the Constitution, Barbados Labour Party government, to prevent the cutting of wages of civil servants ever again, or to make it difficult for them to do so, the Honourable Mayor Motley, she spoke in that debate, and she said, position of the Labour Party, who through the 1950s and again in the late 70s and the early 80s brought legislation to improve the rights of workers, not to take away from those rights of the workers. What we have fought for in the 50s, what Grantley Adams had fought for when he passed the Protection of Wages Act, so that you can no longer pay anybody in kind for their labor. That is found at page 647 of Hansard, and the date is February, I think it's February 7th or something like that, 1975. So the Prime Minister knows that you cannot pay in anything other than legal tender. She said so in Parliament in 1975. Bonds are not legal tender. And I do not understand, if the government wants to cut wages and want to go about it in this circuitous route, float a bond and tell the public workers you are free to buy. I am sure they will not buy, because nobody in Barbados will trust a government bond in the next 15, 20 years or more after what the government did with those big government paper. Then people were getting 5% and they reduced it to 1%.
Yeah, but the government's counter to that is that it never touched bonds. It touched other government paper.
Yeah, I know, but you see, you don't have any confidence in them. So you never know when they will touch the bond. Because I never thought that. I mean, over the years, people who I counsel, do a little bit of financial counsel in that time, I would always tell them, put their money in government paper. Because when they get their gratuity and they had nothing to do with it, I didn't want them to lose it. And I told people, put your money safe. That was bad advice. But at the time, I thought it was good advice. One lady contacted me and she said, when they first made the cuts, and she said, I will now get back my money when I'm 117 years old. You know, and then the government made some adjustments so that she could get back a little bit of it.
Well, let's deal with the first item on the agenda, which has to do with the Protection of Wages Act. And you have outlined here the position which was taken by the Right Excellent Errol Barrow, and that it binds the Crown, the Act binds the Crown. And then you went on to quote the now Prime Minister of the country saying that you couldn't pay in kind. But all this comes down to, if that is indeed the interpretation, is a changing of the law.
But then they will have to change the law first. And they haven't done so. The law is still on the books. Mind you, this government is back to parliament and changing it. Like we have here the situation with the two deputy commissioners of police. There's no provision in the law for it, but they already have two. They will change the law eventually to regularize that. I don't want them changing the law to regularize what they're planning to do now. I want them to have a debate on it first, and then if they succeed, and they will succeed if they do it because they have the numbers, but then the public will be exposed to what they're doing. They can't come about with this boss move and hoodwink people.
Let's deal with the obvious response of people who are supportive of the government's move, and it has to do with where we are today in the COVID pandemic and the options available to the government in circumstances where, to all intents and purposes, for the time being, the bottom has fallen out of the tourism sector, the vital tourism sector. If not this, what? That's the question they will put to you.
I am one of those people who supported the government during this pandemic. I removed myself from the position I previously held, and I never attended social partnership meetings. And I accepted an invitation so I can participate in this whole COVID-19 response. And I pledged my support to the Prime Minister at that meeting. I did not pledge my support to break the law. Okay? And they invited me to meetings. As a matter of fact, one of the meetings was held back for half an hour so that I can come. Then, when this force savings thing was introduced, they didn't invite me. I heard about it from somebody calling me, telling me, Casper, you're not in a meeting? I said, what meeting? And you know why that happened? And I'm guessing now, because one of the newspapers called me and asked me about it, about the cut in salaries, because they got some advance information that it can happen. And they pointed out to them that it was wrong, it was illegal, and I will not support it. So my position was known before the meeting. So nobody invited me to that meeting. They have subsequently invited me to others. And I refuse because I'm not going to be treated that way. I will not accept that kind of behavior from anybody. But they knew what they were doing. They would contact me on WhatsApp. They would contact me on email. And they would contact me on my phone. And all three apparently failed because I didn't get an invitation to that meeting, because I would have been the voice in there saying, no, you are wrong, stop it. I didn't want that.
Yes, but you have been supporting the government. Fine, fair enough. But we still come back to the question of what do you see as the possible alternatives in circumstances where the government is required to have some kind of stimulus program in the country, but does not have the wherewithal to do it and is therefore relying on the public servants to assist. And by the same token, it is also signaling by the comments which you have heard from the advisor to the Prime Minister and to the government, that the private sector seems ready and willing to gobble up these bonds.
Well, if that is the case, issue a bond for whosoever will to take.
Or, alternatively, make the adjustment to the law as you have outlined it.
You know, look, public workers, I deal with them every day. People come to my office and cry. You know, sometimes I am so affected. When those people leave my office, I have to, like, the stress from the pain that I have just taken over from those people.
You need to recruit a counselor or a psychologist.
I have already contacted one to talk to me. I've spoken to one because I think I'm taking on a lot of people's burdens. Yeah. So I actually spoke with one last week. Oh. And
so this will be a regular feature of your work, that you will have a counselor on a regular basis, or is just through COVID?
No, I think I will do it more so because I'm taking a lot of pain from people, mm-hmm. and I do not want it to affect me negatively. So I don't want to end up in a situation where I have to get it. I try to be proactive. So I've actually contacted one, and he's promised to do it for me. And as a matter of fact, he's going to do it for free.
So, but then he'd be taking all your burdens.
Yeah, well, that is his job, and he will then also then probably have his own counselor. But, you know, these people come to me, they're crying, and they're talking about people at the level of even doctors who you think they're making a lot of money. Yes, they might make a lot of money, but then you make a lot of money, you peg your expenses to suit the money that you have. So they don't have a lot of excess savings to do anything with, to save, to buy bonds, to buy anything. Civil servant for 10 years, well, 9 years or so under the last administration, when David Thompson came in, he gave them an increase. And then for 9 years after that, they had none. Everything went up, but their salaries. Then this government came in and gave them another 5% increase, and then promptly take it away by increasing taxes on everything. So their salaries now have the same value of the salaries that they were having back in 1994. But the value of everything else has gone up.
Yes.
The cost of everything else has gone up.
But of course,
the workers do not have the money.
That is driven largely by the general economic situation facing the country.
And I agree.
And this is where the significant question to a person who is in the opposition seat now. That question always is, so what is your alternative? What have you put on the table? Because let me just finish the point by saying to you, it comes across the summer as though it's so easy to sit down and wait for whatever government, whatever decision the government makes, and then shoot at it. Say it's wrong, but without advancing anything to say, well, basically, my role, this is opposition politics, and all I'm concerned with here right now is to oppose for the sake thereof. That's something you need to respond to.
Look, I remember going to the registration department and checking on the judgment books. And I actually sat down and totaled up the judgment that you had against people who collected VAT and did not pay in. One of my suggestions to government was to go after that money, because there were some very prominent Barbadians who, and I said, stole this money, because this is money that was paid into them to hand over to government, and they kept it. I totaled up those taxes and penalties and interest, and I got tired after I reached $1 billion. With a B, not million, billion. Government, in turn, rather than go after that debt, they wrote it off. And then you are coming to tax poor people and giving away actual money that people stole, you know, because it is a criminal offense to collect VAT and not pay in. Those people collected the VAT. So how can I ask, can I give away over a billion dollars? Because I didn't get the anything. I just got tired. You give away over $1 billion. And then you are going to come and say, you got an old fella who has a pipe come from the road, just in the yard, didn't come in the house, you got to pay me $45 a month just for the privilege of having that pipe. You are robbing the poor and giving the rich.
Yeah, but that doesn't give me, you see, that still doesn't address the big picture.
No, but I'm telling you, I'm getting to the big picture. Government has ways and means of collecting its revenue, but refusing to collect the revenue. And that is the problem. If government had collected the money or still go after the money that is owed, we would not have these problems. You know, government is owed too much money. But too many people that are known to government, and I talk about both administrations now, you know, they don't want to go after their friends. So they leave the money outstanding. I know of one lady who worked at the VAT department who got vexed and resigned because when she found people owing as much as $25 million in VAT and didn't let her go after it, she couldn't take it anymore. She left. I'm going home and drawing a pension now. Young, strong woman. I see her every day on Facebook when she could be in the office going after this money. Government refuses to go after the money. One company in Barbados alone, $25 million in principal. I'm not even talking about penalties and interest. That company is still working. That company still advertises, and I'm not going to say much more because then...
Most likely they will say to you that part of the challenge here is that it also creates jobs for people. And the more jobs a company creates, the softer the approach may well be from time to time.
Now, if you owe me $25 million, I don't think that company will pay in 50 years $25 million in staff and wages.
But what? But ultimately, from you, therefore, there really is no alternative to the BOSS program right now.
Oh, there is an alternative to the BOSS program.
What is
it's
it?
It's just that the government is taking the easy way out. They're always penalizing public workers. Every time there is an adjustment in the economy because you need help, they go after public workers. 8% pay cut. Everything you do, you send home public workers last year and think of sending home some in 2014.
Yeah.
It is always the public workers who suffer. Now, so, if there is a burden to bear, let that burden be spread across the entire country. Do not put it on public workers because they are easy targets.
And exactly how would you go about doing that? Imposing that burden on the country as a whole?
Well, the same bond you're talking about, if you will buy them, or a tax. Put a kind of cess.
Another tax.
On all salaries from everybody else, and not only public workers.
But I thought we were overtaxed.
But look, but they're overtaxing public workers then. So you can put that whole burden on public workers, share the burden. If you're going to have a tax on anybody, put it on everybody, it's going to be less. You know, many hands make light work, and if you can do with taxes, but if everybody pays, it's going to be less than if you have to put it only on public workers. They cannot continue because public workers are an easy target. And because they are docile, they don't fight. You know, I have people come into my office complaining that they're being mistreated and stuff, and they tell me, but you can't call my name here. I said, well, how can I represent you if I can't call the people? Can I write to the Ministry of Public Service and say you're unfair and so on and so, but you can't do the name? People are that afraid.
Okay.
In Barbados.
We're just there.
I'm not talking about a one-off situation, you know.
Yeah.
Many people leave my office when I tell them, but I have to write your name in the letter.
Okay. Well, just stay on the line for me a few minutes if you can, so
yes,
that
I will.
We could interact with some other people. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. The Whit
good
Monday
morning.
Edition. Hello. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Hi, Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
Sorry, I'm not calling to make a contribution to the BOSS.
You don't have to. You don't have
issue.
To. You're not limited to that at all.
Right. Why I'm calling, I actually called this program a few weeks ago, and I got some results, like within half an hour, actually. And it's regarding the water situation. Following that call, the minister and some of the hierarchy from the Water Authority came on, and they said when the reservoirs get to a point, they're automatically cut off. But I want to put a scenario to you. Couple of weeks ago, every evening at a certain time, the water would go off. Sorry, first it started every night. Then it went to every evening at a certain time. Then it went to between 5 in the morning and 6 in the morning. It would come on for about 30 to 40 minutes only for the entire day. Now it's been off for a week. In the meantime, tanks run dry because 30 to 40 minutes is not enough time to refill a tank. I live alone. I have a 600-gallon tank. I have no water because the water has been so poor. The water supply has been so poor for the last couple of months. And it even got worse in the COVID-19 period.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We also see people with the biggest wrench you could ever think of, shutting off, literally shutting off water. And yet these officials want us to accept, us intelligent people that this country educate, to accept that the water is just shutting off when it's going off at specific times and when you see people actually turning it off. And I really think that it's time that this is addressed, because this is even outside of COVID, this is a dire situation. This is a ridiculous thing to have to live with. asked you to invest thousands of dollars in a tank that they're begging you to do. What you gonna do now? Get two tanks, three tanks, four tanks? I am wondering now, you know, who's benefiting from the sales of these tanks and everything else that's involved with them. And it's difficult to live this. And
so you
want something done.
You got absolutely no comfort from the comments which I think the Prime Minister made a couple of days ago when in her news conference, when she sought to indicate that the government was fully conscious of the concerns which have been raised and that it is doing its best at the moment to try to address this particular issue. I thought, did you hear that?
I didn't hear it. And you know what? A promise is a comfort to a fool. And I am not comforted. I really am not, because this is over 20 years. And it's only affecting one part of the island. And then you're getting fed a lot of rubbish as to why it is happening. When your intelligence is, you know, making it hard for you.
But what would be the objective of... Well, I suppose you may tell me that some people must perhaps of a certain type and privilege may live in one area and they're diverting the water to that other area. Because my question is, what is the benefit of shutting down the water to people like you then?
I don't know.
But that don't mean, to me,
they talk
doesn't
about load, they talk about load sharing. But if there's load sharing, why other areas don't go without water? And they're not, all the other areas are not necessarily built up and development and high-end society places. They're not. There are other area districts like mine that do have water all the time. So if there's something called load sharing, why can't this load sharing benefit the people that go without water for weeks?
No.
There was a year that we went without water for 10 straight weeks, including Christmas Day and New Year's Day and all of those days.
How long ago was that?
To celebrate.
How long ago was that?
That was about 3-4 years ago.
Okay. All right, well, it's a complaint that we've been hearing here for quite some time. We've also heard the government, and in particular the Prime Minister, indicate that the administration is fully conscious of the problem and really does empathize with the people, but it is not something that can be fixed overnight, that definite steps are being made to address it. So we can only keep our fingers crossed, and in the meantime, the Barbados Water Authority really needs to step up its process of communication with people like you to allay your concerns and your fears, because you're seeing and saying one thing and they're saying something else. Thank you very much for calling us. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hello, David.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help you?
I would like to speak on the BOSS program.
Yes.
Now, the government has to reduce its wage bill. Okay. Now, it would normally have laid off persons, but because of COVID, it is unable to do that. It would put too much strain on the NIS and those other entities. The government is going to achieve its objective under what the accountants will refer to as a book entry. Let's say there's a public servant, John Brown, who receives $3,000 in cash every month. This month, an entry is going to be made in the ledger that John Brown has received $2,500 in cash from the government and a $500 bond. The entity which has floated the bond issue will pay the $500 into John Brown's account. So the ledger for this month will reflect that the government has reduced its wage bill by $500. And this will apply to all the civil servants. And the government will be able to show evidence that they have reduced the wage bill.
And
what?
What's wrong with that? Obviously,
I'm not saying it's anything wrong.
You make it sound as though it's a sin.
I'm not saying it's a sin, but the government could come out and tell the people that is what they're going to do, but I don't know why there's all this secrecy and all that sort of thing.
Well, I thought that the government has made available one of its major spokesmen to deal with this. Earlier in the week, he was here on Brass Tacks. Well, I thought that he did. I don't understand where you're coming. You sound as though you got some secret that you're now revealing.
So if that's what the government intends to do, why is the Prime Minister going to meet with the civil servants tomorrow and Wednesday?
Well, obviously, they still have some work to do in trying to clarify some of the questions that people have on their mind.
What questions people have on their mind?
I don't know.
You said in opposition. You said this morning that the public sector is going to subscribe to the bond issue.
I said that?
I didn't say that.
I read in the newspaper here where the government spokesman is saying that even if the public servants don't buy the bonds will be subscribed to by people in the private sector, and therefore the government will still be able to get the money. He thinks it's a clever approach to dealing with the problem.
So why is all this thing about meeting with public servants, and if you're going to get the money you need from somewhere?
You may be trying to convince the public servants of what a good deal it is for them.
Well, what is the object? The objective isn't the government to achieve what it wants to achieve.
Yeah, but the government, politically, it needs a win-win.
The bonds are issued, okay? Public servants who want to buy the bonds could buy the bonds. The government don't have to convince them that it's a good idea for them to buy bonds.
But, you know, people do their business in different ways. If you had to do it, you would just pelt the bonds at them and go along. There are other people who feel that you got to, you know, talk to people, all right? Everybody don't believe that the way to deal with it is to just pelt the things at them and say, take it or lump it.
Anybody.
But you are just looking
for a way to reduce the wage bill, and you are producing a document showing that you have reduced the wage bill.
But everybody is entitled to their method, to their approach. Why is it that you want to ram your particular approach on the government's throat?
I'm not ramming my approach, but that is the approach they're going to use, and the IMF know what they're doing. Everybody knows what they're doing.
All of those who criticize the move have to answer just one question, and what is your alternative?
I am not criticizing any move, David.
You're praising it?
I'm saying the government intends to do something.
Just do it.
And they're doing it, okay?
Just do it.
But Mr. Greenwich admits that whether the public servants buy the bonds or not, they're going to get the money.
So, as I suggested to you, I can only speculate, because I do not speak on behalf of government. Other people have that job. I want to say to you that it is reasonable to conclude that it is better to have the public servants agree than to have a situation where the bonds are put there and very few public servants take them up. And then credit unions and financial houses in Barbados become the bigger beneficiaries of this thing. So from a political perspective, you're trying to sell it to people. Or even at a minimum, you must appear to try to sell it to people.
So what's so special about the public servants that they should take out these bonds?
Well, that's a question for me or the government?
For anybody who cares to answer.
Well, I don't care to answer.
Once Barbadians take out the bonds, but public servants are Barbadians, and if they see a deal, if they have money in the bank and they're getting less than 1% on it, and somebody is offering them a deal where they could get 5%, and they don't take it, well, they will have to be stupid people or something.
All right, well, we will see what happens. Caswell, do you have any comment to make?
Well, he's making a lot of sense. That's exactly what they're doing by trying to appear to be bringing the wage bill down. It is just deception. Because if they're saying you can then cash the bonds in, and if you want a bond, produce a bond. And as he's saying, that the public workers, if they want to buy them, buy them. And if they are so attractive and they have the money to do so, they will buy them. Because I've been on Facebook and I see people saying that he saves every month, and that he, one particular person, he saves every month and he can get 5% as opposed to the 0.1%. Let the people are not stupid. You don't force them into that.
But isn't this 601? You say force. Where is the coercion in this one?
The coercion?
Uh-huh.
You have a person with the weight of the prime minister going around to union meetings and trying to convince. That is...
That's coercion?
Bullying tactics, you know? Look.
That's in all fairness, there are others who look at this and say, well, it's communication. It is trying to sell it. It ain't coercion. At the end of the day, if you have an option to buy or not, how can that be defined as coercion?
David, look
yes.
at me. Listen to me very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
The unions went and sat down with the prime minister, and one major union said, well, we agree. And now, yesterday, they had a meeting to ask the workers if they agreed. That is cart before the horse.
But that is not the government's coercion?
No, because they are doing the government's bidding. And they're now trying to convince the workers to follow the government. They forget who they're representing, you know. They're not representing the government.
But you know, that's a different point. That's about the union and its strategy and its approach. But if one is saying that you're going to give public servants an option to purchase, and if they don't want to purchase, then the private sector will be allowed to do so, then how can you define that as coercion? It's difficult to follow.
You are sitting in a meeting with people who should be free to speak.
Mm.
The public workers will not be free to speak, and they will not be free to speak, but the prime minister, they're saying no over them. You know, I don't care how nice she appears to be, people can still be intimidated by her presence. Union meetings should be for union members, and they will sit down and they will trash it out, and then they will come to their own conclusions. They're going to come to the conclusion, when you ask them to vote in the prime minister's assembly, they're going to put their hand, because they don't want the prime minister to see their hands in the air.
Yeah, but I would concede that if they're going to be put to the vote in the presence of the prime minister, then there is an element of intimidation to that, if that's how they're going to do it. But you have a number of members in a union who have got to be able to determine what's in their best interest. And therefore, if you go to a meeting and it is structured in the way that you are suggesting, they are also in a position, I would think, to say to their union, look, we want, if we are to vote, then we want to vote under other circumstances. Who is strong enough in the union to say to the majority of the people that the prime minister should be present when they are voting? That is something that is within their power. They don't have to go through that.
It's in their power, but they're not going to do it. You're talking about barbarians.
Oh dear.
If I were at that meeting, I would say to them, but you have the prime minister got a reason being here. I sat at meetings and the other people. And they said, well, this person should not be here because that's their role. I remember going to a meeting, and they said to the person, you know, look, you're intimidating the people. You should not be in here. And the president, this was a credit union meeting, and the president, I invited, I said, okay, we invite. She will leave or the meeting will break up. They're not supposed to be here. But there are not very many people that will do that.
Last time
when Sinclair was in power,
mm-hmm.
he invited me and the other unions to meetings, and I said, well, you know, he has no power or any right to be involved with trade unions at that level of, and this is a service, and I refused to go. He went on the radio and he complained and he made noise, so I'm on TV, saying I refused to come. I said, I am not coming with you there. You are not the permanent secretary of the civil service. And that's what you should be dealing with. And I didn't go. You see? And she is not the permanent secretary of the Ministry of Civil Service. That is who the unions negotiate with. Politicians should stay away from the unions, should stay away from negotiating, because that's not their role. There is, even if they guide the civil servants who do the negotiation, they should not be there.
All right.
This is political, as opposed to being... ordinary business. This is trying to force a political point on people.
All right. Well, Let me see who else we have on the line.